You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Uncensored, where we talk about inappropriate things and how we fail out in the hunting world.
Inappropriate things.
What did I say?
No, you did. That's what you said.
Very much, yes. We are sponsored by Gunbroker. I've actually got a little Gunbroker story. I was gifted a broken 22 caliber rifle.
This is starting out well.
What's that?
I don't know. It was broken.
Oh, the story, yeah.
Gunbroker, not gun it was broken. Someone,
How broke was it?
Pretty broke. And my wife, Amanda, one of her coworkers, it was like the grandfather's gun, and it was called a Ranger, which turned out to be a Sears rebrand, a white-labeled Sears rebrand of a Marlin. So once I knew that, I could get on Gunbroker and look for all these missing parts. It only had a front sight, post sight, and it had like a little piece in the barrel where I'm like, oh, that should be where the elevation is. And then it had this weird thing tapped onto the receiver, like the back of the, not the bolt, but where the bolt goes into the very end of the rifle. And so once I knew it was a Marlin 80 or 81, it was kind of a mixture of both. I got on Gunbroker and was like looking for parts, and I'm like, oh, that's actually the rear sight mounts to the back of the gun and taps onto the receiver. And they had, it also didn't come with any magazines. It was a mag fed 22. So Gunbroker had the magazines for it. Gunbroker had the rear sight for it. They had a ton of stuff in the marketplace. So
sweet.
Go to Gunbroker. So you get an old broken gun, fix it up with gunbroker.com.
That was a good story, Dan.
Wasn't it a good story?
Yeah.
And then you're un-gun broken.
Yeah, it was all way too expensive. I mean, you know, if you're a collector, people know what they got. They know how rare their stuff is. And for me to fix up a broken 22, it's like, I don't know if I want to drop $300-$400 in random parts when I could just slap a red dot to it.
Yeah. And then you got a squirrel killing machine right there.
Yeah.
What happened to your shirt?
This?
Sig burn.
Yeah, sig burn, like the first weekend I got it.
I thought you were, what did you do? Just like put it out in your chest?
No, an ash fell off.
Like one ash?
That's and like honestly, you know what? It might have been a sick burn, but it also might have been a campfire ember.
Yeah, because
the first weekend I wore it was I went out to a campfire, and literally like that weekend I was like, oh, I got a hole in my shirt, but now it's like weathered. It's more valuable. It's like buying the pre-ripped jeans or like jeans with bleach stains on them.
Yeah, I can see you doing both, where you were like passed out at the campfire with like a cigarette
kind of. That's what I pictured, like Mamaw's cigarette.
And then like it just kind of like dripped down and fell and just.
I wouldn't put it past me. Right, it could have happened. Chest.
Better story.
Yeah. So what did you guys get into this weekend?
Nothing. I was at the firehouse Saturday.
Shaved.
Wait, did you fish last week? You said you were
ended up
Thursday, Friday.
Out. Ended up not getting out. We were, like, long story short, my buddy that I was trying to go with, who's back from Japan, that's kind of like the whole point of this. He hasn't really been able to do any hunting or fishing for, like, 2 years. He has a hard time getting off work on weekdays unless it's, like, pretty far out advanced. And this was, like, a week's notice and just probably wasn't going to happen. But then he works half days on Fridays. So we're going to try to get out on Friday when he got off work. But then the weather was just, I mean, it ended up not being near as bad as they were calling. But it just ended up not happening. But
yeah,
I went and did a little bit of fly fishing on Floyd's Fork earlier in the week. I can't remember if it was Tuesday or Wednesday.
So you were pre mud because it was muddy when I was out there.
Yeah.
Saturday.
It was still pretty up though from the rain that we had had before that also. But I didn't do any good.
Yeah.
It ended up being more frustrating than anything. I was kind of just trying to get out there to relax for a little while, and then it was like, well, I can't get to like any of the spots that I like to fish because the water's still high. And
okay, so were you trying to wet wade, or were you in the
no?
On
I
the
mean,
bank?
I was No, I mean, I was able to wade out in some spots, but I wasn't wet wading. It's still a little too cold for that, in my opinion. Mm. But
what part you go to?
Just a part.
Don't give me that.
I'll tell you.
I've blown my honey holes. You can tell me where you went.
You can blow your honey holes all you want.
Yeah, one time we went to Floyd's Fork, and Jacob's like, I got a super secret spot. And I'm like, cool.
Nothing secret on that
and
cruise.
I literally, no. I literally just opened up the map, you know, the uh-huh. Google map, and was looking at the creek, and I go, this looks like it'd be a good spot. And Jacob's like, that's my super secret spot. And I'm like, oh, it's the most obvious spot on them. For anyone just looking at a map, they'd be like, that'd be a good spot.
No, there's, like Jacob said, there's nothing super secret out there. But
no.
I'm not as open with knowledge I'll tell you guys all day, but just in this setting, I just don't want to say it.
Our listeners are dying to catch some 6-inch smallmouth.
Mm. And some stalker trout.
Yeah.
But I did that, and then, yeah, work Saturday, and then yesterday, Sunday, St. Patrick's Day, I did my corned venison that's been in the brine for this whole last week, and that turned out to be incredible.
Really?
Yeah, we did.
Did you do a roast? Was it what?
It was a roast. Was it? Yeah, it was a roast.
Leg roast or neck roast?
It was a leg roast, and just kind of trim the silver skin off and everything, then make the brine.
Hmm.
I used Hank Shaw's recipe like to a T. I didn't change anything up about it. So
you did it in the oven?
Stovetop.
Stovetop.
Yeah, so you like brine it for 4 to 6 days. Kind of just depends on the size of the roast. I did 2 days, or not 2 days, 5 days. It was roughly a 2-pound roast. And then threw it in just a little pot with some water, put it on the stovetop, and just kind of simmered for, I think it was in there for about five-ish hours. And then what I did, we had a beer league game last night, so it was done around when I needed to leave for the beer league game. So I just turned it off and just let it sit in that water for like an extra hour and a half, 2 hours while we were gone, but not cooking. And then got back and sliced it up real thin. It was actually falling apart more than I wanted it to.
Oh, so you don't even have to, like, sear the ends or sear the outside of it?
Nope, literally just brine it for 5 days and then just simmer it in a pot.
And doesn't corned beef have peppercorns on the outside?
Corned beef does, yeah. I mean, I'm sure you could probably do that with the venison.
But you didn't corn it.
No, I corned it. I mean, corning it is like the brining.
It comes off in the water.
Yeah.
So it's just the flavor. It doesn't have
corning,
to have it.
Like the term corning is like the brining part. I don't really know.
It's not peppercorn.
Mm. I don't know why the name is that way. From what I understand, because like in Hank Shaw's recipe, it even says after the 5 days, it's like you now have corned venison. Now you just have to cook it.
Hmm. And I just in my head just mentally realized that corned means peppercorn, not corn like corn on the cob corn.
It doesn't mean corn on the cob corn. I don't.
There's no yellow corn in it.
Yeah.
But there's peppercorn, right?
The peppercorn is part of the seasoning that goes in it, but yeah. I don't think right. That's what corning means because it has peppercorn.
Someone can
sound off in the comments.
Someone can let us know what it is. But yeah, no, it fell apart actually more than I wanted it to, which was fine. I mean, the flavor was still incredible. But yeah, just put it on some rye bread with the fiance's homemade sauerkraut and some mustard and some Swiss cheese. And then we put that like on the cast iron and got them nice and toasted with the cheese melted, and it's good.
Yum. Erica, are you looking it up?
Yeah, I'm just gonna fact check us. What is corning? Is that what we want to know?
Yeah, sure.
Corning is a form of curing. It has nothing to do with corn.
Yeah.
The name comes from Anglo-Saxon times before refrigeration. In those days, the meat was dry cured in coarse corns of salt. Pellets of salt.
Corns of
kernels
salt.
Of corn were rubbed into the beef to keep it from spoiling and to preserve it.
Thanks, Jamie.
Yeah, thank you, Jamie.
Who's Jamie?
Oh, Joe Rogan's fact checker.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
To think I invented it.
Erica, what are you doing? Are you starting on your garden yet?
The garden is started. I have a basement with racks of seedlings and lights and things.
What kind of things in your basement with lights?
Don't you worry about
hydroponics of various.
No, really, it's just we got tomatoes, we have the San Marzano tomatoes to do the
what?
San Marzano. I'm probably saying it wrong.
I don't know. No,
that's me. Like the tomatoes that are grown in Italy that make like the really good tomato paste and sauce and stuff like that. Those. Squash, zucchini, eggplant.
The eggplants are fun.
I got a bunch of different flowers growing down there. I've never done eggplant.
We did two cucumbers. Last year, and it was one too many. Plant put off so much, and we had two. So, I mean, we had eggplant coming out of our
ears. Did you have the big ones or the small ones?
Big ones.
Yeah. We eat a lot of eggplant when we have it, so we couldn't have too much eggplant.
It was eggplant every meal.
Okra was one that we were doubling down on a little bit this year because we liked it so much last year.
I don't like okra.
I love pickling it.
Oh, okay. So my uncle shared with me a spicy pickle recipe that he has. And so this is the first time I'm doing cucumbers. I'm doing a lot of them so that I can pickle them.
Nice.
Just staring into Dan's pickle them.
I'm still pulling that audio clip out to use in memes.
That's the short number one.
So I can pickle them.
Anywho, that was that.
Are you doing anything different this year as far as, because you were dealing with weeds a whole lot last year, right?
Yeah, you did that like carpet on the ground, burnt
literally
holes.
Every year. I've been gardening for like 10 years now, and every year I'm doing something different to try and fix my problems. The first few years I did raised beds, so they wasn't much of an issue, but now we have like this whole big like just plot of land, and then like we could really go into it, but some people are like, you shouldn't till the land, it brings up the weeds from the bottom and disturbs the earth, and some people are like, you should till it. Anyways, right now there's like a big dark plastic that is over the entire area that we have that is like smothering, no light going in,
choke it.
Yeah, choking it out.
And then are you just going to cut holes in that plastic and plant here?
No. I think what I'm going to do is rip that up and then kind of like remove anything and then like maybe do like a little, like you take those like little forks and you just kind of like
agitate it.
And then, I don't know, in theory it sounds good. We'll see.
Look, Jacob, I think you're the only one that actually, you took time off work. Last week,
Thursday.
How'd that go?
Well,
you went to Taylorsville?
No, we went to Giss Creek, which, you know, looking at the weather, there was weather coming in Friday. It was like a prefrontal chance of sucking were high. But what I didn't realize is that there was significant wind that came in on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And I have fished out there many times. My dad was saying the same thing. He's like, I've been out here. I mean, he fished it 30 years ago or whatever. And he was like, I have never seen white caps on this lake. So there were certain spots of the lake based on how you were facing, and that wind coming through was just choppy as all get out. And so I would say probably about 10 o'clock or so, the wind really started picking up. And so we were trying to like move into coves and get out of the wind, and caught a couple bass on points, rocky points. I mean, they were kind of staging for spawn like they're supposed to be, but couldn't really dial in to consistently catch them. And we don't have spot lock on our trolling motor. So I would hit a bass. I'm like, Dad, we got to go back through there. We got to stay here. We got to, cause they're going to be coming up in schools. Let's pound this spot. And it was just too hard to fight the wind to keep the boat there. So it was a little tough. So did a lot of jerk bait. Not really any luck with that. But then what I did catch the couple on were spring crawfish colors. So red crawfish, pretty typical pre-spawn stuff. There were other people fishing around us because everybody was trying to get out of the wind, and there was only certain spots you could go to do that. So it did get kind of crowded in one spot, and I could see a guy fishing a white jerkbait off a point that we had just fished. It came through behind us, and they pulled three bass that had to be, you know, 2-3 pound fish.
Dang.
And so I'm like, all right, well, the first thing I did was throw on a jerkbait and start pounding the point that we were sitting on, and just didn't have any luck. So I don't know. It seemed like on the fish finder, they were at 12 feet, kind of just suspended at 12 feet. I didn't have any jerk baits that would suspend at 12 feet. Tried fishing some soft plastics. They wouldn't have it. So I don't know. A little disappointed. Wasn't as good as I was.
Looks like your dad caught a big old catfish.
Yeah, he caught about a 5-pound flathead catfish.
Yeah.
It was funny. It was really typical. Very soon, as soon as we got in the water, there was a log, isolated cover at an angle, and he cast his swim bait past it, came right by. I mean, you just assume there's a
big old bass
stud sitting on this log. It's just typical bass water. Brings that through there, and this thing takes off, and he's like fighting it, and it's pulling drag, and I'm getting the net out from under the seats, and we both assume this is a huge bass, and he gets that thing up, and he's like, "What in the world?"
On a swim bait.
Yeah, because he was, this was an active fishing. Yeah. He wasn't just sitting on the bottom. Like, he was pulling a swim bait past his log. And
I've done that a couple times at Taylorsville using, usually white paddle tails.
Yeah, this was like a kind of bluegill color.
Yeah, just like a white paddle tail, and I'll just be, bouncing it off the bottom, basically. And twice I can think of, I've hooked into, nothing as big as that catfish, but some pretty decent catfish. And you get real excited for, the first couple seconds, and then, you figure out pretty quick how it's fighting.
Did you catch a catfish on a North Carolina fly fishing
trip? Yeah, when we were in the French Broad.
I do remember fly fishing. You caught a catfish on I remember you brought it in. You're like, this is the first time I've ever caught a catfish on the fly rod.
Yeah, first time. I mean, it was fun.
Yeah.
5-weight. Yeah. Fun catfish.
Yeah, good little battle.
But it's funny, when Dad caught that, he didn't really care, wasn't that excited. And I was like, Derek would totally eat that.
Oh, yeah.
But we didn't keep it.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah.
I can get more.
But yeah, fishing was slow. And then we took the kids to the creek for a little bit on Saturday afternoon, and it was chocolate milk. Mm-hmm. I got a couple bites.
Didn't you text me this weekend saying it would be good?
Yesterday. I said it would be good Sunday.
Oh, be good Sunday.
I don't know what it ended up being like, but when I was there Saturday, it was still pretty muddy. Actually, today probably be better than yesterday because that water's coming down, and a little bit of stain to it is good because that water's so shallow and clear. That's usually when I would try to fish it hard.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was too cold to wet wade, though. I would totally walk out in the water.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I kind of meant wet wade with boots on, up to ankle height, not up to your waist. And
I would have done it in,
I know, especially Derek is so cold-blooded. Cold-blooted.
I mean,
you're not wading that deep.
I would have wet waded, but it's also, if I have it's not hard to just throw my waders on. So my fly fishing waders are not insulated.
Yeah.
So I'm really not, short of just staying dry, I'm not really getting any warmth from them.
I was trying to put together my roof rack so I can take my kayak on the road and cut all my aluminum. I made a jig, measured the back.
Aluminium.
Of the topper. Made a jig fit perfectly, cut all my support beams to length and everything and put it on the roof, and it didn't fit. And I'm like, what's going on? And then the whole thing is like the back is lining up right, and then the front is way off, and I'm like, what's going on? And then I measure the front of the roof racks, and they're an inch and a half wider than the back of the roof.
It tapers.
And I never
considered, I would have thought it would be the other direction, though.
I never considered. I guess it kind of follows the shape of the truck. The truck must taper a little bit.
Hmm.
But I never considered that. I just assumed roof rack rails would be parallel, and they are not. So I had to order some more aluminum. So
that's totally something I would do. that is me doing projects.
Yeah.
It's 22 inches both sides.
Yeah, why not?
Measure twice, cut once.
Yeah, and then I just did chores. So I'm gearing up for having everything off my schedule for turkey season and good after this spawn fishing, which I feel like is this next month.
Yeah, it's getting cold this week. I don't know what it's going to do. I would fish the warmest part of the day right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, this Friday, I think Thursday it's supposed to storm, and then Friday, Saturday, I think it's supposed to be back up into the 70s. So,
great weather. They're talking snow chances tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, come on.
Just like little flurries. You won't even see it.
Okay. Hey, when's the Senate vote on the...
The Senate already voted.
Or that? What's next, the House vote?
Now it's in the House. Talking about Senate Bill 3.
Isn't that the opposite of how?
Uh-uh.
No.
They either from what I understand.
Oh, either one can introduce a bill. Okay, that's right.
What are we talking about?
Senate Bill 3, which is the most dangerous piece of legislation ever presented in the state of Kentucky when it comes to hunting, fishing, or anything.
Conservation.
You just really, not that you're going to say the most dangerous piece of legislation ever, and then you're like, in the state of Kentucky about hunting, fishing. But I thought you were just going to be like, the most dangerous piece of legislation known to man.
In our
lives. No, just pertaining to hunting and fishing in our state.
Okay, tell me about it.
So it wants to move, in essence, what it's going to do is it's going to move the Department of Fish and Wildlife under the commission, or under agriculture. It'll be
Department of Agriculture.
From the Department of Tourism.
And that's not good for a lot of reasons. First off, agriculture and hunting and fishing kind of have different agendas. They want the land to be in all ag and don't really care about wildlife species. On top of that, they view wildlife as a nuisance. They want wildlife regulated on a much higher level. They want to eliminate wildlife because it's, in their eyes, it's a pest. And this has been a battle that's been going on in Kentucky for a while. The way that our fish and wildlife is structured, basically the whole state's broken into 9 different districts. Those 9 districts have a director, so to speak, who is voted on by the sportsmen in the state, and this would eliminate all of that, and every position would be appointed by the governor or Department of Agriculture. So basically the outdoorsmen, sportsmen, and women in the state would have no voice for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. They would have no say in how anything is ran. Senate Bill 3, which the name on it implies that they've been working on it for a while since it's such a high number. And then they kind of dropped it the last day that you can drop new bills.
So they made it an emergency.
And they put an emergency clause on it, basically meaning that as soon as it is voted in, it immediately goes into effect. And there's some other backdoor politics that are going on there, because right now we have some districts spots that are vacant that need to be filled. So this would be a way that as soon as it goes in, they can put whoever they want there versus someone being appointed and then still having a year to serve a term there. It's just some dirty backdoor politics that are going on. And it's also a conflict of interest. It's illegal, but it's the government, so they can do whatever they want. Senate voted on it last Friday. It passed. It was actually a lot closer than people thought it would be. If I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head, I want to say it was like 20-16. People are speaking up about it, and a lot of people that either didn't know about it or had no interest in it, realizing that something is amok here and it doesn't look good. So it definitely got a lot more opposition in the Senate than they anticipated. Now it's in the House for review, and then the House will vote on it. We don't know exactly when they're going to vote on it yet. I think it's either has already gone to committee in the House or it's going to committee sometime this week. But just keep an eye on it.
Yeah. I would a little shout out for our friends at Sportsman's Alliance. If you're not a member and you have not seen, their emails that come out that tell you about this stuff that's going on, especially it'll be particular to your area. They make it so simple to act, to send a letter, to send an email. And so you get this email. It tells you kind of a basics of what's going on. It gives you a button that says take action. You click that take action button. It goes in. You kind of fill out your address. It throws in the politician that it needs to go to. There's a templated letter in there, or you can make your own and then fire it off and send it. So
Sportsman's Alliance is a great one that's doing that. I also obviously have to make a plug for BHA. They're doing the same thing with our take action alerts, and it sends emails to your representatives. The newest one that we have up now goes to your House representative. It also goes to, I believe, the two, I'm going to butcher who they are, but it's two separate chairmen that I believe are on committee for agriculture. The other thing Kentucky has is we have a legislative hotline, and this is another thing. So taking action, sending emails, doing all that stuff is great. Everyone needs to do that. What speaks louder than that, though, is phone calls. So call your representatives, You're not going to actually talk to them, more than likely. If you even talk to a person, it's going to be like a secretary or something. But everyone I've called, short of the other day, I actually talked with one person, but everything else has just been leaving messages. But phone calls speak much louder than these emails do. Kentucky, like I said, has this legislative hotline. It is, I'll give the number right here. It's 502-564-8100. And all you got to do is look up who your representative is. When you call that number, a very nice person will answer the phone, and you tell them, I want to talk to Representative so-and-so, and they direct you right to them.
What's your conversation like when you talk to them? Like, what are you giving them points of why? Or are you just saying, like, you don't agree with it?
It's just all veiled threats.
I mean, you got to figure, like, you're one of thousands.
Yeah, that's kind of wild.
You're not going to say the one point where they're like, I really should.
They're hearing this already. So kind of what we've been telling people at BHA to tell people is keep it short and simple. Like I said, you're not going to have a conversation, more than likely.
It's more of like a tally mark of like, okay, someone else called about this.
You're going to be talking to a answering machine. So very quickly, kind of what I've been saying every time I talk to it is, I'm asking you to do everything you can to kill this bill. And then I kind of lay out like two or three points that basically this is, first off, a conflict of interest. Second, it is bad. It's not even bad science. It's no science. They're taking science completely out of wildlife management, and they're just putting it completely under the Department of Agriculture so they can do whatever they want. And then I also like to point out that no state in the United States has their wildlife department structured this way.
I was going to ask good you reason. Earlier if any other state had that.
To my knowledge, and no one else at BHA that I know of has found any other state that is like this, that their Department of Fish and Wildlife, DNR, whatever it's called, is under the Department of Agriculture.
I would imagine it would be a state that doesn't make a lot of money from agriculture. Well, it'd be like an Alaska or something.
And from what I'm understanding, and this is all speculation, but part of why this is happening is apparently Department of Agriculture in the state of Kentucky is not doing too hot right now. So they're freaking out, and they're kind of on a money grab, and they see all this money sitting here in Fish and Wildlife.
And all that land, all that public land that they could sell off or,
it's
you know,
a more
lease
junior
out.
Senator, too.
That's a tactic. So I've learned this with getting involved with BHA like I have been, is apparently that is a tactic that they use in
They use
a junior, like a freshman or sophomore senator or representative or something to sponsor these very, very controversial bills.
Because they're full of piss and vinegar.
Yep. And then, I said, it's a conflict of interest because Jason Howell, who is the senator who has sponsored this bill, is the chair. I'll butcher all these titles or whatever. He's the head of the Senate Agriculture Committee. So he's got everything to gain from this.
Slimy man.
Very Yellowstone.
I feel like it also sets, I mean, you saying that we're unable to know or see any other states that have it structured this way, it sets a precedence for other states that see this. And it just takes somebody within that Department of Agriculture to be like, ooh, I want that too.
I can tell you that there is already conversation going on within BHA bigger than the Kentucky chapter. And everyone's the whole nation is watching what's going on here right now.
This
because
has
there's
a
some
national
very
focus.
Serious implications that could come from this if they get it through.
I've seen the Meat Eater, Hunting Public. There's other people that are talking about this outside of Kentucky.
Yeah. Almost every major conservation, hunting, fishing, sportsman's group in the nation, almost every. I can think of one right now that hasn't made any stance on it. I won't say who it is, but there's only one group that I know of that has not. And they haven't said that they're in support of it. They're just sitting silent. But every other group that you can think of, all these huge groups, Pheasants Forever, NWTF, all these
Ducks
huge
Unlimited.
All these huge groups are opposed to this. I mean, it's not good at all. So, and they know that this is bad and dirty politics, and they know that everyone's watching them now. And from what I understand, they're doing everything they can now to sneak as much of this stuff by.
And do you know when the vote's going to be?
No, that's part of it. This starts getting into stuff that's over my head, but from what I understand, like, they even canceled the committee meeting in the House to talk about it. And from what I understand, that's kind of a tactic that they're using. They're canceling this huge public meeting so that they can, like, last minute do an emergency session somewhere where people aren't going to be able to be there.
It's so slimy, just gross.
We should take a trip to Frankfurt on the day of the vote and go sit in the chamber.
Should we deck out in camo?
There was a bunch of groups that went to the Senate committee meeting. I guess it was 2 weeks ago now. It might have been last week. I can't remember. But there was a very strong group of guys that went and representing all different groups, BHA, League of Kentucky Sportsmen, some other stuff. And they, you know, what they did was they dressed very professionally, you know, shirt and tie and everything, but everyone was wearing blaze orange vest over top.
Smart.
You would think that, okay, I don't know anything about this, so I'm really going to sound probably stupid, but you would think that, politics aside, that people that are interested in agriculture, the farmers and whatnot, would actually be against.
No, they're for it because they're tired of deer eating all the crops.
I know.
I guess what I mean is that funds for their goals.
I guess I meant that, like, they wouldn't be for the Department of Agriculture taking away, like, any type of, like, hunting abilities, because most, like, people in agriculture are.
Yeah, I mean, I think
hunters,
I
they're not wanting to take away hunting. Like, this isn't like an attack from like, the Humane Society or something. What they want to do basically is. Honestly, they're selling what to someone who doesn't really look too deep into this, what seems like a great deal. You mean to tell me that you want to take our current bag limits of 4 deer to 7, 8, 9? Like, mm-hmm. you want to be able to kill more deer, more turkey,
right?
Extend seasons? Like, all this sounds awesome. Well, yeah, maybe for like a season or two, but what happens when you start taking away habitat and then you start killing more game animals? It'll be great for a couple seasons, and then I'll have to, down the road, look, you know, my kids in the eye that I might have one day and say, hey, yeah, there used to be deer everywhere here, but now they're all gone because we killed them all.
But look at all those cornfields.
But we got all these cornfields.
Yeah. I get that.
And that's kind of the approach that they're taking, and mm-hmm. it's messy. Because it's not some easy, quote-unquote, easy attack from some, you know, animal rights group that's like, we want to ban hunting. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone can rally up around that.
You know what's funny is, like, is this a situation where we could actually lock arms with the animal rights people and be like, hey, they're wanting to kill more animals, maybe you should join forces with
us. I mean, my representative in the Senate,
our representative
in the Senate, I mean, she's no knocks against her, but she leans in a very different political direction than I do. And she voted no on this because I'm sure she's got different motives. I think she kind of just views it as a power grab more mm-hmm. than anything. She probably doesn't care too much about it, but yeah, it's just interesting. It's bipartisan, but there's, I think it was Mike Abel. Someone said the other day, it's like, it's not bipartisan. It's nonpartisan. It's like a better way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
But,
all right. Well, we'll keep our eyes on that. And, you know, hopefully by the time this goes live, you'll still be able to call if you're in Kentucky, or even if you're not in Kentucky, call our senators.
I need
call
to
our
find
House
out,
of Representatives.
I need to find out what people who are not in the state can do, because I've already had a couple people on Go Wild say that, like, they went to the Take Action links and they couldn't fill them out because they're not Kentucky residents.
They're not local.
But, like,
you can still call a phone number.
You can. It's just I don't know who they would want to talk to.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you got any questions about how to get more involved, hit up Derek on Go Wild. Send him a DM. He is on top of it, and we appreciate him volunteering his time to look into that and fight for our access and better hunting in Kentucky.
Slide into Derek's DMs.
Slide on in.
Yeah, all sorts of stuff going on Go Wild. 15% off sale. When does that end? Or did that end?
It'll still be going on.
Okay.
Ending soon. When this goes live, it'll be like a couple days.
I'm still working on getting a whole bunch of good fishing gear that we'll be dropping.
Yeah, you need to come on with that. I'm trying to buy some stuff.
No, I am too. What else is going on in Go Wild?
Turkeys
are
dropping.
Going on.
Gobble, gobble.
Yeah, so check out Go Wild. Check out Gun Broker for all of your broken gun, antique broken gun parts and turkey red dots. Jeez. And anything else you might need. And we will see you next week.
Bye.